From the land to Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of July, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing. We'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lernert, World Weather Incorporated, and Alan Brugler will join us. He's with Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska, and we'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Just a quick reminder that I'm traveling this week. Now let's get an update of the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing.
Good afternoon, Todd. We'll start out with corn support and resistance. September, 543 support, 601 resistance. Crossover is at 722. December, 517, 561 with a crossover at 756. March, 520, 566, and a crossover of 625. We look at beans, August, 1403 support, 1523 resistance, crossover of 1655. September, 1292, 1409, and a crossover of 1580. November, 1322, 1466, and a crossover of 1515. On August gold, we have support at 1823, resistance at 1920. Dow Jones continues to trade between 31661 support and 35091 resistance with a crossover of 36807. US dollar 88.25 for support, 93.87 for resistance. Bitcoin 27451 support, 34720 resistance. The funds this week are back into the marketplace and have definitely been buying. They've added to their corn, beans, wheat, soy meal, and soy oil positions. And you certainly can see it when you look at the market itself. For wheat wheat exports are running 15% behind compared to a year ago, where they were 16% last week. We need 16.6 million bushels a week on average to meet the USDA projection. Corn, 68% ahead of a year ago, was 69 last week, and we need to average 51 million bushels to make the USDA average. Soybeans, 52% up over a year ago, was 54 last week, and there we need to average 6.4 million bushels per week to reach the USDA projections. When we look at the markets, pretty interesting. Weather is what we talk about all of the time, and now I think we need to really add funds, and more funds. We're hearing reports of yield potential drops in Illinois to 195 from the 202 that they're currently at. There's been word surfacing that the U.S. yield could actually come in below last year's 176.6. In fact, Dr. Cordonier is at 175.5. So that says to us that there is really no room whatsoever for any kind of yield issues in the future. On Monday of this week, we actually had the USDA supply and demand report come out. We saw them make adjustments on old crop, and that helped us a little bit because due to the acreage changes from the end of June, we picked up, our production went from 14,990 to 15,165, and yet we still only saw a small increase. They made absolutely no big adjustments to export for next year. They did increase them by 50 million. They're still 350 million less than they are this year. When we look at beans, very little to no change whatsoever, other than the average gate price dropped from 1385 to 1370. And wheat was a big surprise. Wheat came in at 665 for ending stocks compared to 770 last month. And therefore, you know, we're in a situation where wheat has been, well, a lot of people are talking about using wheat to feed in the place of corn, often used as a substitute, so it's not a big surprise. When we look at the world numbers, we saw world corn numbers actually go up from last month. We saw world bean numbers go up from last month, and wheat numbers were the only ones that really fell back. Now, I looked a little deeper at the acreage report. And, you know, in corn, Minnesota added 500,000 more acres than last year, South Dakota 400,000 more than last year, and North Dakota 300,000 I shouldn't say more than last year, but this is in comparison to what the March projection was. I'll take that back. So I did some calculating as far as what the risk number for bushels would be in those three areas, and I used the poor to very poor to determine that. So on Monday, North Dakota was at 27% poor to very poor, and they produced 139 bushel to the acre last year, so that says there'd be about 123 million at risk. South Dakota, 24% poor to very poor, 162 bushel to the acre last year, that would say 212 million bushels at risk. And Minnesota, 16% poor to very poor, and last year they produced 192 bushels to the acre on average, so that puts them at 245 million bushels and puts us approximately at 580 million bushels that are at risk of some sort in those three particular states. That's pretty significant when you think about it. I'm going to jump now to China. You know, we talked last week how China has been really working to try and keep any information out of the availability away from all of us. Well, they came out with this now. Tech experts in China who find a weakness in computer security will be required to tell the government. And they can't sell the knowledge under the rules, further tightening the Communist Party control over their information. This rule bans any private sector expert who finds a zero-day or a previously unknown security leak from selling the information to the police, spy agencies, or companies. It seems so strange. Sell it to the police? Anyway, such vulnerabilities have been that's been the big thing when it came to major hacking. And, the one this month was blamed on Russian group, and that infected thousands of companies in 17 different countries. So Beijing is getting really sensitive about controlling any information about its people and economy. And they're barring companies from storing any data about the Chinese customers outside of China. So they can keep it all on us, but not on China. Under the new rules, anyone in China who finds a vulnerability has to tell the government, which will decide what repairs to make. And no information can be given to any overseas organizations or individuals. No one may collect, sell, or publish any information on network product security vulnerabilities. And all of these rules go into effect on September 1st. So I tell you what, it's been difficult to get information from them. It's getting even more difficult. Jump to Brazil. The president of the Rural Syndicate of SINOP, which is part of Mato Grosso, said that he believes that the safrinha corn yields are down by at least 20% to 30%. Instead of 95.4 bushels to the acre, they're probably going to get about 71.5. And this is considered to be the better corn. When you look at Argentina, there's continued unrest in Argentina just because of the lack of vaccinations for port workers. And I expect that that's going to continue too. And we look at the Fed now. The Fed, Powell was testifying before Congress. And in the remarks that he made, he said that the labor market in particular is well below where it was before the COVID pandemic hit. And therefore, the Fed's benchmark of substantial further progress toward full employment and stable prices remains a ways off. And the federal officials foresee two hikes by the end of 2023. Hope you're having a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jackie. Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing. Earlier this week, I gave Alan Brugler a call. He's with Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. This is an interesting week for producers because they now have USDA's latest World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report in place. They've got a crop progress report from Monday in place. They have the CONAB numbers from last week in place. And of course, the updated acreage and grain stocks figures from the 30th of June. It won't be until August till we really start in on something different. What do you see for the next month or so?
Well, I think the market's going to go back to trade and weather primarily. It's that, of course, is a very inexact science, both in terms of the forecast and in terms of the impacts that those forecasts have on production. But that's pretty typical. You see what USDA's got in July, and then you interpolate, because what everybody wants to know is that yield estimate that they're going to come out with in August.
And the yield estimate they used this time around was the same for both corn and soybeans as they did last time around. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think they had to. Okay, it is a weather-adjusted trend line yield. It's not a simple math yield of the last 20 years of trend. It's adjusted for conditions. I think that basically they didn't have enough data to tell them to change it. If you look at what the Eastern Corn Belt's been getting some pretty good rains. You're getting rains right now or the last couple of days either way in Iowa and Illinois and Eastern Nebraska and South Dakota and Minnesota coming up. And so you've definitely got a drought problem in the West, but you've also got the potential for some above trend yields in the East. So I think they just said, we don't know, percent times percent how this is going to turn out, so let's just stick with what we got.
On the supply and demand side, a bit more demand, part of that because there's a little less supply on the world market. According to both CONAB and USDA, they're within 0.4 million metric ton of each other now, down around 93 million metric ton, way off of what had been projected to be in really large crop on 8%, I think, more acres of corn in that Brazil, that South American country of Brazil. How much of a difference does this all make? And I'm driving, I suppose, at that $5.60 season's average cash price USDA is using. That even then, it was down 10 cents.
Yeah, they had to, I think, drop the cash price. And if you read between the lines, of course, that's for next year. That starts September 1. So right now, what they've got to work with is forward contracts for fall delivery. And, of course, December corn failed to get back to the May highs on either of the last two rallies. So I think they just kind of said there's a lower average for those cash average or forward sales for Sepoc Nov, and that drives the first quarter cash average price quite a bit.
Does it make sense in your mind with the carryout for the 21-22 crop year?
Well, we're still playing with our techno fundamental tables right now. I think the key question here is that the shortfall in Brazilian production is clearly going to reduce their exports, but the timing of those exports is still up in the air. Okay, if you're going to cut your exports to 18 or 20 million tons, is that August, September, October, November shipments, and then you're out? Or is it get delayed because domestic producers and crushers and so forth are intercepting some of the corn, and what you've got to sell ends up being Sepoc Nov? Well, obviously that can play with the U.S. exports in August and first quarter, and potentially even overhang into second quarter a little bit. Right now, we're assuming that most of what they've got to sell is going to be shipped in that August to November period out of Brazil. So we think the U.S. first quarter exports will be a little light, relatively speaking, because of that. The other wild card, of course, is how much is China actually going to buy? The Ag Attaché cut the estimate for 21-22 for Chinese corn imports. And today, USDA cut a million tons off the Chinese soybean imports. So there's some question as to are the Chinese going to be as aggressive as they have been?
How do you see, given nothing would change between now and harvest time, and through the end of the year, how do you see that playing out? Do you see a weak market, which would be relatively normal, in harvest? Sometimes we do have an uptrending market even in harvest if the crop is, well, depending on what demand is like. But I guess you're telling me export demand might be off slightly.
Yeah, I've got to assume that these prices, which are still multi-year highs, although off of their highs, are doing some demand rationing. And a lot of times that takes a while to show up. You end up with smaller numbers later than you thought you were going to have. Again, that's a normal process. It could change if the Chinese are really going to adhere to the phase one, year two purchases. They're a little light yet. But the other part of that, what's going on with the supply side? Where does that yield end up? If we're If we're 174 on corn national average, that's then prices at some point have to go higher than this. These are cheap under that scenario. But as you kind of alluded to, we can go down and have an early harvest low, or we can get nervous early and try and ration the demand. And then later on, once we know things are safe, then see the price deterioration. I think everybody's assuming that Brazil's going to expand their production of everything this fall, probably heavy first crop soybeans again. But the lesson from 2012-2013 is that at $5 corn or $12 or $14 beans, everybody in the world thinks they could grow it, and you start to see increased production in places that don't normally play into the export trade.
That's Alan Brugler with Brugler Marketing and Management. I spoke with him earlier in the week. Just a quick reminder, you can find Mr. Brugler and all the rest of the interviews I do up on the website, usually inside the Closing Market Report. Once in a while, they'll be lowered down in the website. That address is at willag.org, willag.org. Time to check in with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks, Drew. Tell me about the weather.
Weather conditions across Canada's prairies and the northern U.S. plains will likely deteriorate as we go forward through this next 7 to 10-day period. There will be a few showers around, but they will not be capable of countering evaporation, with temperatures running in the 80s and 90s every day, and there will be some extremes over 100 degrees as we get into the weekend and especially next week. That kind of heat in an environment that's already void of moisture in the soil is really going to stress the crops and push them over the edge. Some of these crops have managed to hold together relatively well because of scattered showers over the past couple of weeks, but those pocketed showers really haven't done anything to support long-term crop moisture. And now that we're going through a little longer period of dry and warm to hot weather, there's going to be a bigger impact on these crops. Already there's been some damage done and some loss in production potential is common across the region, but I think you're going to hear about accelerated losses now as we go forward through this next period of time. Now, there will be a change in weather up across the prairies as we get to August and into September, and I think this will be the peak of the worst conditions that we're going to experience here over this next 10 days. So once we get into the first part of August, there will be a chance for a little more rain, especially in the west and northern parts of the prairies. The southeast will be longest in getting back into any kind of meaningful rain, and it might be the second half of August before that changes there. The northern U.S. plains and upper Midwest is really in the same boat. North Dakota, parts of Montana, northern Minnesota have really done poorly with rainfall recently, and the soil moisture profile is quite poor. But we have seen some rain occur from parts of South Dakota across northern Nebraska into portions of Iowa and even the far southernmost parts of Minnesota. And so we're seeing a bit of relief in these areas that at one time were also trending rather dry. This has really helped to stop the decline in crop conditions and actually reverse them in some cases. Last weekend, we had good rainfall to occur across eastern portions of Nebraska, down through western and southern Iowa into northern Missouri, even a part of northeastern Kansas, and from there into western and southern Illinois and on through the heart of the Midwest. So all of these areas have had plenty of moisture recently. The ridge of high pressure that will be building up across the plains and portions of the Midwest over this next week will most likely stay out in the western part of the Corn Belt, and what will happen for the eastern crops is that we'll see a warming trend take place, and that warming trend will occur with less rain, but that's exactly what some of these crops need. It's just been a little bit too wet for some soybean crops to really benefit from the pattern, and bringing a little bit of warm and dry bias conditions back to this region will likely stimulate much better crop development. In the meantime, some of the corn and soybean producing areas in the northwestern part of the production area in the U.S. Have managed to see relatively favorable weather here recently, a lot less stressful than it was earlier in the season, but there's still moisture deficits in the soil, and that's all going to come back and become quite notable in the area as we go forward through this next 10-day period of drier and warmer conditions. So the stress for crops in the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, and portions of Iowa, even Nebraska, will likely become more notable as we go forward through this period of time and we start to accelerate the drying and take away that topsoil moisture boost that has occurred recently, and then we'll start seeing the crops suffering a little bit more. You know, there's other areas in the world that are also experiencing some adverse weather, one of which is Western Russia. They dried down significantly over this past week, and the topsoil is running short to very short, but subsoil moisture is still good in most of Western Russia. And the same kind of phenomenon occurred in Ukraine over the past week. So both these are major grain and oilseed producing areas, and we are seeing perhaps a potential for crop stress to evolve, but only if this pattern prevails. And that's exactly what's not going to occur. As we go forward through the coming 10 days, we're going to see a switch, a reversal back towards a more frequent shower and thunderstorm pattern. And all of these areas that have dried out recently are going to see some timely rain. So by the time we get to the end of July, these moisture shortages in the topsoil will be almost gone. The only place where we'll see ongoing moisture shortages will be in Russia's southern region, neighboring areas of the lower Volga River Basin area, and western Kazakhstan. And so we'll continue to watch those regions. In the meantime, China's had more flooding take place as we've gone through the past week to 10 days. Some of that flooding's been fairly impressive, with the day-to-day rain totals running in the range of 8 to 14 inches since last weekend. And that's been really significant, but only in pockets. There's still been a potential for crop damage because of excessive moisture standing in fields. And just like in the U.S., when we have wet years like that, there's a tendency to lose some of the crop in those low-lying areas. And I think that may be the case. But China's losses this year shouldn't be as great as they were last year, when flooding was much more serious and more widespread and more persistent. So I think China's weather is going to churn now as we go forward through these next couple of weeks with less frequent, less significant rain for many areas, and it'll give the crops a chance to get a handle on their development again, and they'll probably start to improve as time moves forward. The last area of concern today is in India, where the monsoon has not performed quite as well as it should, and we have seen rain fall in most of the country at one time or another, but there is a tendency here for the rainfall to be more erratic and lighter than usual. That's leaving holes out there where the soil moisture profile continues to be a little low, and we need to see a boost in precipitation take place in order to support these crops in the long run. Now, I do think that we'll see a better rain distribution as we go forward through the next 10 days or 2 weeks, but the amounts of rain may stay lighter than usual. As long as that's the case, we run the risk of not adequately replenishing the deep subsoil moisture or the water supply, and that raises some concern when we get into the dry season farming, which will be next winter or late in the autumn after the monsoon ends. We could have some moisture shortages across parts of India that could threaten some of the unirrigated winter crops. So we'll be watching that rather closely.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.